EDL Radio Encore.
Welcome, everybody, to the East Anglian's EDL Radio Show Christmas Special. I'm glad that you all can be here. Like I say, this is our Christmas Special. We are taking quite a departure from the usual, the politics, and everything else. Jeff and I thought that you would just really enjoy a respite from everything that seems to happen around us, you know, the rest of the time in the year. So we decided that we were going to put this special together just for you, and this is also an appreciation of your support for the show as well. Now, it is a very busy time of the year for some people. I'm aware of that. So who can be here or who listens in archive, we are eternally grateful. Like we say, this is for you. Now, there's going to be a lot of music, and there's going to be a few stories, and I'm going to start with one right now. You heard that song that I just played, and that is What Child Is This? That was by Sarah McLachlan. So, What Child Is This? Well, I will read you a Christmas parable, and why did Jesus come? One raw winter night, a farmer heard an irregular thumping sound against his kitchen storm door. He went to a window and watched as tiny, shivering sparrows, attracted to the evident warmth inside, beat in vain against the glass. Touched, the farmer bundled up and trudged through fresh snow to open the barn door for the struggling birds. He turned on the lights and tossed some hay into the corner. But the sparrows, which had scattered in all directions when he emerged from the house, hid in the darkness, afraid. The man tried various tactics to get them into the barn. He laid down a trail of saltine cracker crumbs to direct them. He tried circulating behind the birds to drive them to the barn. Nothing worked. He, a huge alien creature, had terrified them. The birds couldn't comprehend that he actually desired to help. The farmer withdrew to his house and watched the doomed sparrows through a window. As he stared, a thought hit him like lightning from a clear blue sky. If only I could become a bird, one of them, just for a moment, then I wouldn't frighten them so. I could show them the way to warmth and safety. At that same moment, another thought dawned on him. He grasped at the reason Jesus was born. Now, as a parable, it's a very simple story. The story might not even be perfect, but the message behind this parable is very powerful. Did God come near? There was no reason why, if God is love, that he could not. Did he? If the Christmas claims are real, then yes, God did, and there is indeed a reasonable basis to have hope. So I thought you might enjoy that. Like I say, there is a reason for everything out there, and it all points us back into the true light and the right direction of Jesus Christ, our Savior. We're all a lot of little lost birds, aren't we? Some are a little more lost than other birds, but sometimes all it takes is one simple gesture to make us realize that we are not alone out there. We never walk alone. There is always somebody beside us walking with us. If you ever feel you're alone, you're not. Sometimes it's very easy to feel that way. I will talk about that a little later. For now, though, I just want you to enjoy some Christmas carols, and I've got a beautiful one here that I know that you all will enjoy. And this is the Carol of the Bells by Celtic Women.
Thank you.
And there you go. Like I say, that was from a Celtic woman. Now, I came across this really interesting story, and I'm sure many of you have heard it in the past, but I read it every year. I find it so touching. And this is regarding Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer that was written to comfort a grieving daughter. Now, it is fiction. It's not a parable, but it is quite touching. Now, there is a little bit of truth to the story, but how exactly it came about, that is always up for speculation. But Robert L. May wrote a Christmas poem called Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer in 1939. Now, how he came about writing it, this is the story that we hear. Robert L. May, he worked as a catalog advertising copywriter for Montgomery Wards and Company when the company, recognizing his skills in poetry, asked him for ideas on a booklet of illustrated poems as a promotional giveaway. Now, Mr. May's wife, Evelyn, she had died of cancer in July of 1939. And according to his accounts, in a December 22, 1975 Gettysburg Time article, this was 1 year later for the account of the e-rumor. May also had a daughter named Barbara. And according to a Paul Harvey Rest of the Story article, she was recruited to help in development of the story to make sure Rudolph would appeal to children. May would read to her his verses, and if she inquired about the meaning of any words, he would simplify the vocabulary. May pitched his story to Montgomery Ward's executives about the ugly duckling reindeer with three possible names. The company turned down the idea and asked May to return with a second draft. When May came back with his improved story that included sketches by an illustrator, the company executive accepted it, named the red-nosed reindeer Rudolph, and the rest is history. The story distributed 2,400,000 copies of the booklet during the 1939 and 1946 Christmas season promotions. The year 1946 proved to be such a financial success for the company that the executives awarded May with the copyright of his popular Christmas story. Now, this is the fictional part. There was a man named Bob Ray, depressed and brokenhearted, stared out of his drafty apartment window into the chilling December night. His four-year-old daughter, Barbara, sat on his lap, quietly sobbing. Bob's wife, Evelyn, was dying of cancer. Little Barbara couldn't understand why her mommy could never come home. Barbara looked up into her dad's eyes and asked, "Why isn't mommy just like everybody else's mommy?" Bob's jaw tightened and his eyes welled with tears. His question brought waves of grief, but also anger. It had been the story of Bob's life. Life always had been different for Bob. Small when he was a kid, Bob was often bullied by the other boys. He was too little at the time to compete in sports. He was often called names he'd rather not remember. From childhood, Bob was different and never seemed to fit in. Bob did complete college, married his loving wife, and was grateful to get his job as a copywriter at Montgomery Ward during the Great Depression. Then he was blessed with his little girl. But it was all short-lived. Evelyn's bout with cancer stripped them of all their savings, and now Bob and his daughter were forced to live in a two-room apartment in the Chicago slums. Evelyn died just days before Christmas in 1938. Bob struggled to give hope for his child, for whom he couldn't even afford to buy a Christmas gift. But if he couldn't buy a gift, he was determined to make one, a storybook. Bob had created a character in his own mind and told the animal's story to little Barbara to give her comfort and hope. Again and again, Bob told the story, embellishing it more with each telling. Who was the character? What was the story all about? The story Bob May created was his own autobiography in fable form. The character he created was a misfit outcast like he was. The name of the character, a little reindeer named Rudolph with a big shiny nose. Bob finished the book just in time to give it to his little girl on Christmas Day. But the story doesn't end there. The general manager of Montgomery Ward caught wind of the little storybook and offered Bob May a nominal fee to purchase the rights to print the book. Ward's went on to print Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and distribute it to children visiting Santa Claus in their stores. By 1946, Ward's had printed and distributed more than 6 million copies of Rudolph. That same year, a major publisher wanted to purchase the rights from Ward to print an updated version of the book. In an unprecedented gesture of kindness, the CEO of Ward's returned all rights back to Bob May. The book became a bestseller. Many toys and marketing deals followed, and Bob May, now remarried with a growing family, became wealthy from the story he created to comfort his grieving daughter. But the story doesn't end there either. Bob's brother-in-law, Johnny Marks, made a song adaptation to Rudolph. Though the song was turned down by such popular vocalists as Bing Crosby and Dinah Shore, it was recorded by the singing cowboy Gene Autry. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer was released in 1949 and became a phenomenal success, selling more records than any other Christmas song, with the exception of White Christmas. The gift of love that Bob May created for his daughter so long ago kept on returning back to bless him again and again. And Bob May learned the lesson, just like his dear friend Rudolph, that being different isn't so bad. In fact, being different can be a blessing. Now, like I say, there is a mixture of truth and fiction in this account, but I don't care because I like that story. It warms me up. It makes me feel very good to read it, and it makes me feel very good to share it with you. Now, I did not download Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and I apologize for that. But we do have quite a repertoire going on in here. But I want to share something with you guys. And this is actually quite amazing. This is a song that you have never heard. You're going to hear it here for the very first time. This is from my girlfriend, Colleen Gray. She penned this not too long ago, and she was kind enough to send me an MP3 so I could share it with you on this Christmas special. This is pretty much her debut on the East Anglian's EDL radio show. This is Starbright by Colleen Gray. Thank you. Eternally grateful to my friend Colleen allowing me to play that song and share it with you. I make no secret that she's probably one of my favorite singers in the whole wide world. Boy, she writes some very beautiful things. And if you listen to Red Fox, I play quite a few of her songs on that program as well. But now, you know what? We can't all be, you know, somber. This is Christmas. We got to have a little fun too, right? Yeah. Now, with comes Christmas, comes responsibility, and that includes imbibing. We always eat too much, or we might drink a little too much. But, you know, as long as you don't drink and drive, you know, enjoy the old eggnog there. Have at her. However, when you start getting Christmas presents and they pertain to nothing but alcohol, you might end up like this. You know what? Kath sent this to me, and I just love it. This is hilarious. Take a listen, guys.
On the first day of Christmas, my true love gave to me a partridge in a pear tree. On the second day of Christmas, my true love gave to me two cutty sharks and a partridge in a pear tree. On the third day of Christmas, my true love gave to me three old crows, two cutty sharks and a partridge in a pear tree. On the fourth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me four old Fitzgeralds, three old crows, two cutty sharks and a partridge in a pear tree. On the fifth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me five dry raspberries. Four old Fitzgeralds, three otters, two teddy. And a partridge in a pear tree. On the sixth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me six gibberlibras, five dry raspberries. Four old Fitzgeralds, three otters, two teddy. And a tree. And a bird with a fruit on the limb. On the seventh day of Christmas, I too love gave to me seven Johnny Walkers, six Jubilees, five Red Roses, one of the Jazzers, two Cubs, two Caddies, and a tree in the meadow. On the eighth day of Christmas, I do, I do. It's the old-fashioned sunset.
and we're over to her field. And the cherry with the fridge on top. And then I think when I say, I am me. And I might, my eyes are seen a glory. Margaritas. I see old fashioned sex. I walk a sister, please. I pull up a sister.
She got a city bus in there somewhere. I don't know. Either way. Now, if you look into the slides that I have put beside the show highlights, and if you read the show highlights, I think Jeff is going to fire me, but it's okay. It's Christmas, and we're having fun. And we're trying to bring the joy of the spirit of Christmas to you as well. But like I say, if you look at the photos in the show highlights, you will see that there is a photograph of some people who will not be celebrating Christmas with their loved ones, and that includes, of course, the soldier. So I have decided that I am going to read you the soldier's poem. My friend reads this on his show every year, and I love it, and I just want to share it with you. This is a soldier's Christmas. I'm just trying to bring it up. It was the night before Christmas. He lived all alone in a one-bedroom house made of plaster and stone. I had come down the chimney with presents to give and to see just who in this little house lived. As I looked all about, a strange sight did I see. No tinsel, no presents, not even a tree. No stockings by mantel, just boots filled with sand. On the wall hung pictures of far distant lands. With medals and badges, awards of all kinds, a sobering thought came through my mind. For this house was different. It was dark and dreary. The home of a soldier, I could now see clearly. The soldier lay sleeping, silent, alone, curled up on the floor in this one-bedroom home. The face was so gentle, the room in such disorder. Not how I pictured one of our soldiers. Was this the hero of whom I've just read, curled up on a poncho, the floor for a bed? I realized the families that I saw that night owed their lives to these soldiers who were willing to fight. Soon around the world, the children would play, and grown-ups would celebrate a bright Christmas day. They all enjoyed freedoms each month of the year because of the soldiers, like the one lying here. I couldn't help wondering how many lay alone on a cold Christmas Eve in a land far from home. The very thought brought a tear to my eye. I dropped to one knee and started to cry. The soldier awakened, and I heard a rough voice. Santa, don't cry, for this life is my choice. I fight for freedom. I don't ask for more. My life is my God, my country, my core. The soldier rolled over and drifted to sleep. I couldn't control it. I continued to weep. I kept watch for hours, so silent and still, as we both shivered from the cold, cold night's chill. I didn't want to leave on that cold, dark night, this guardian of honor, so willing to fight. Then the soldier rolled over, and with a voice soft and pure, whispered, "Carry on, Santa. It's Christmas Day. All is secure." One look at my watch, and I knew he was right. Merry Christmas, my friend, and to all a good night. And there you go. That is for the people who are forced by circumstances of war who cannot be with us. Not only with us on these days, but pretty much of all days, right? Yeah. But I've got something here that you might find interesting. And that is the history of the Christmas tree. Where did that come from? Yeah. That came to us, so well, England gave that to us. Now, I just let my dog out. She was whining at the door, so I might have to put on a little bit of apology music in the middle of this. And, of course, I'm going to be, you know, not happy about doing that, but... what can you do? Anyway, the first Christmas tree. Or you know what? What I'll do is I'll put myself on speaker while I go and get her. That'll be fun. You guys can hear me. Well, what happened is that Prince Albert, he was Queen Victoria's consort. He's usually credited with having introduced the Christmas tree into England in 1840. However, the honor of establishing this tradition in the United Kingdom rightfully belongs to the good Queen Charlotte, the German wife of George III, who set up the first known English tree at Queen's Lodge, Windsor, in December 1800. Now, legend has it that Queen Charlotte's compatriot, Martin Luther, the religious reformer, he invented the Christmas tree. And this goes way back to one winter's night in 1536. So the story goes. Luther was walking through a pine forest near his home in Wittenberg when he suddenly looked up and saw thousands of stars glinting like jewels. Glinting like jewels among the branches of the trees. This wondrous sight inspired him to set up a candlelit fir tree in his house that Christmas to remind his children of the starry heavens from whence their Savior came. Now, certainly by 1605, decorated Christmas trees had made their appearance in southern Germany. For in that year, an anonymous writer recorded how, at Yuletide, the inhabitants of Strasbourg set up fir trees in the parlors and hang thereon roses cut of many colored papers, apples, wafers, gold foil, sweets, etc. In other parts of Germany, box trees or yews were brought indoors at Christmas instead of firs. And in the Duchy of Mecklenburg-Strelitz, where Queen Charlotte grew up, it was the custom to deck out a single yew branch. Pardon me. Now, the poet Samuel Taylor Coleridge, he visited Mecklenburg-Strelitz in December of 1798, and he was very much struck by the yew branch ceremony that he witnessed there. The following account, of which he wrote in a letter to his wife dated April 23, 1799, reads as, "On the evening before Christmas Day, one of the parlors is lighted up by the children, into which the parents must not go. A great yew bough is fastened on the table at a little distance from the wall. A multitude of little tapers are fixed in the bough, and colored papers hang and flutter from the twigs. Under this bough, the children lay out presents they mean for their parents, still concealing in their pockets what they intend for each other. Then the parents are introduced, and each presents his little gift. They then bring out the remainder one by one from their pockets and present them with kisses and embraces. When young Charlotte left Mecklenburg-Strelitz in 1761 and came over to England to marry King George, she brought with her many of the customs that she had practiced as a child, including the setting up of a yew branch in the house at Christmas. But at the English court, the Queen transformed and essentially the private yew branch ritual of her homeland. She turned it into a more public celebration that could be enjoyed by her family, their friends, and all the members of the royal household." And there you go. By the time Queen Charlotte died in 1818, the Christmas tree tradition was firmly established in society, and it continued to flourish throughout the 1820s and 30s. The fullest description of these early English Yuletide trees is to be found in the diary of Charles Grevel, the witty, cultured clerk of the Privy Council, who in 1829 spent his Christmas holidays at Passenger, Herefordshire, home of Peter, 5th Earl of Cowper, and his wife, Lady Emily. When in December of 1840, Prince Albert imported several spruce firs from his native Coburg. They were no novelty to the aristocracy, therefore, but it was not until periodicals such as Illustrated London News, Castle's Magazine, and The Graphic began to depict and minutely to describe the royal Christmas trees every year from 1845 until the late 1850s that the custom of setting up such trees in their own homes caught on with the masses in England. By 1860, however, there was scarcely a well-off family in the land that did not sport a Christmas tree in parlor or hall. And all the December parties held for pauper children at this date featured gift-laden Christmas trees as their main attraction. The spruce fir was now generally accepted as the festive tree par excellence, but the branches of those firs were no longer cut into artificial tiers or layers as in Germany, but were allowed to remain intact with candles and ornaments, arranged randomly over them at the present day. Whatever their type or mode of decoration, Christmas trees have always delighted both children and adults alike. But perhaps no tree ever gave greater pleasure than the first magnificent Yuletide tree set up so faithfully by Queen Charlotte for the enjoyment of the infants of Windsor. But we have to thank England for actually making it a tradition shared throughout the West. Now with that, I'm going to leave you with another song. And this is the Christmas Song by Celtic Woman. Merry Christmas to you. Now, before I continue on, I really do want to thank everybody for being here. And on behalf of Jeff, I know that he would be thrilled. Like, we have me, your host, Cal Fritzy. We have Kath, Drakestrom, Frank. We have a guest in the room. We have Holger. We have Poppy. We have Azua. We have Steve, and we have Mark listening on the line. And thank you all for taking your afternoon and spending it with me and Jeff. We really do appreciate that, and we also want to thank everybody who will be listening in archive later on. Now, I just want to share with you, how do the British celebrate Christmas? Well, Christmas in Britain, it's the most popular holiday and features traditions that date back hundreds of years. Many Christmas customs that originated in Britain have been adopted in the United States and Canada and other Western countries. The first ever Christmas card was posted in England in the 1840s. And the practice soon became an established part of the build-up to Christmas. Over 1 billion Christmas cards are now sent every year in the United Kingdom, many of them sold in aid of charities. Christmas decorations in general have had earlier origins. Holly, ivy, and mistletoe are associated with rituals going back beyond the Dark Ages. The custom of kissing beneath a sprig of mistletoe is derived from an ancient pagan tradition. Now, the Christmas tree, like I say, that was introduced into the royal household by Queen Charlotte, that was popularized by Prince Albert, who was the husband of Queen Victoria, in the 1840s. Charles Dickens' short novel, A Christmas Carol, has prompted people the world over to associate Christmas with Victorian England. Originally published on the 17th of December in 1843, the book was reviewed and became an instant success, the first 6,000 copies of its initial print run being sold out by Christmas. Theatrical, television, and movie adaptations of the book continue to be as popular in Britain as they are elsewhere. Now, every year since 1947, the city of Oslo in Norway has presented the city of Westminster with a large Christmas tree, which stands in London's Trafalgar Square in commemoration of Anglo-Norwegian cooperation during the Second World War. There is also a program of Christmas carols in Trafalgar Square each year. Another Christmas tree, presented by the British Christmas Tree Growers Association, stands outside the Prime Minister's residence at 10 Downing Street. Pantomimes are popular among British children at Christmas time. These are songs and dance dramatizations of well-known fairy tales that encourage audience participation. Carols are often sung on Christmas Eve by groups of singers to their neighbors, and children hang a stocking in the fireplace or on the fireplace or at the foot of their bed for Santa Claus, also called Father Christmas, for him to fill. Presents for the family are placed beneath the Christmas tree. Christmas Day sees the opening of presents, and many families attend Christmas services at church. Christmas dinner consists traditionally of a roast turkey, goose, or chicken with stuffing and roast potatoes. This is followed by mince pies and Christmas pudding, flaming with brandy, which might contain coins or lucky charms for children. The pudding is usually prepared weeks beforehand and is customarily stirred by each member of the family as a wish is made. Later in the day, a Christmas cake may be served, a rich baked fruitcake with marzipan, icing, and sugar frosting. The pulling of Christmas crackers often accompanies food on Christmas Day. Invented by a London baker in 1846, a cracker is a brightly covered and very much colored up paper tube twisted at both ends, which contains a party hat, a riddle, and a toy or another trinket. When it is pulled by two people, it gives out a crack as its contents are dispersed. And that is very much how Christmas is celebrated in England. Now, as you know, Jeff cannot be here. And I have a funny feeling I know what he's up to. All right, you know what he's really up to? He's celebrating Christmas with his family. But I like to speculate, too. You know what Jeff is really doing again? All right, I'm going to fess up, all right? Jeff is not here, realistically, because he is waiting for all of us to go over to his house after the show. That's right. Jeff is making us a huge meal to celebrate Christmas. Unfortunately, Jeff is not the best cook. And if we go to Jeff's house for Christmas supper, this is what we can expect to be served.
What you got then?
Well, there's egg and bacon, egg, sausage and bacon, egg and spam, egg, bacon and spam, egg, bacon, sausage and spam, spam, bacon, sausage and spam, spam, egg, spam, spam, bacon and spam, 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 egg and spam, 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 bacon, spam, 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 spam. Have you got anything without spam in it? Well, spam, egg, sausage and spam, it's not got much spam in it. I don't want any spam.
Why can't you have egg, bacon, spam and sausage?
That's got spam in it.
Not as much as spam, egg, sausage and spam.
Look, could I have egg, bacon, spam and sausage without the spam? What do you mean? I don't like spam.
So, you know, you're taking your life in your own hands if you go over to Jeff's place for Christmas supper. Now, I do want to, there's quite a bit to share. I want to talk about people who perhaps cannot celebrate Christmas. I discussed the soldiers, but there are a lot of people for one reason or another, who simply cannot celebrate Christmas, whether it is because perhaps they are recently divorced or they're recently widowed, or because the heartache of Christmas is too much for them. I want to remember those people as well. And I was speaking with my friend, and everybody knows him as Michael Korn, but when we were talking on the phone one night, because I phoned him, I was asking him some questions about things. I was asking him about a special he had did and if I could download it. And I was in particular asking him about this story that he relates every year. Michael Korn, he's married with children. And one year, his wife took all the kids camping, and he stayed back because he had some work that had to be done, but he was kind of lonely in that house, so he went out. He went to the theater with some friends to alleviate the fact that he was all alone. And when he got out of the theater, there was some scruffy-looking man with his hand out, a homeless man. He was a grubby, homeless man who had his right hand inside his jacket. Korn realized that it was too late for the corner store to still be open to buy him a chocolate bar, so he offered to buy him a meal. He always said that I'll feed the belly, but not the habit. So he did. He took the man to a diner and filled his belly. Now, while they were in the diner, he didn't know what to say or do with this homeless man. And he said that years of university, and that's all I could come up with, was asking him his name. The man said his name was Horse. Like the animal, Korn asked. The man said yes. The man explained that he began to drink so much, his wife left him with their young child. Horse continually claimed that it was his fault. One night, the police found him, and they took him away to sober him up, to inform him that both his wife and daughter had passed away in a fire. They took him to the hospital where they were. In his daughter's tawny hand was a toy horse he had given her. He pulled his hand out of his jacket and said to Corn, "It's this one here. I always hold it. That's why they call me Horse." Corin asked, how could he cope? Horse realized everything would be fine because people who cared for him at a rooming house were Christians. They told him they continually would forgive him because they themselves were once just like him. When they were down, they were forgiven. They were simply trying to repay the love that they had found from God. Corin realized the enormity of Horse's heart while realizing how badly he had minimalized him because he judged him by his appearance. Horse was remorseful because although he was a Christian, he continued his ways on the street. He said he tries to do the best he can with what has become of him, but also because he knows that is what God wants. Corin shared this with a group and said that we should ask ourselves daily if we are complete. If everyone thinks life is meant to be good all the time, they do not understand the teachings of Jesus. If you can remain faithful to the teachings of Scripture, the church, and the sacraments, you can answer yes. There is an eternity of joy and happiness with God. God did not guarantee us a good life, but he did guarantee his perfect eternity. So I just wanted to share that with you. And like I say, not everybody can celebrate Christmas in the bosom of their familial homes. Maybe they're not with friends. Like I say, maybe they're hiding. Maybe Christmas is just too painful for some people. And those are the people that we have to think about. You know, Christmas morning, around that tree, the presents, the feast later on in the day, that's great. But there are a lot of souls out there that are completely alone. And I know we're doing a Christmas special. And the other 364 days of the year, we really don't get that much of a thought. But, you know, we really should. And that's what I mean when we put that we hope the wonderment of this Christmas season, it stays in your hearts always. Think about those who can't be where they want to be in their lives right now. Maybe they are struggling. They're mourning, perhaps. They don't know what Christmas truly means to them at this point. But let us let them know they will never be alone.
Not a home. Try to imagine the Christmas all alone. That's where I'll be since you left me. My tears could melt the snow. What can I do without you? I've got no place, no place to go. It'll be lonely this Christmas without you. remember the day you went away. How I would listen to the things you had to say. I just break down as I look around, and the only things I see are emptiness and loneliness and an unlit Christmas tree. It'll be lonely this Christmas without you to hold. It'll be lonely this Christmas, lonely and cold. It'll be cold, so cold without you to hold this Christmas.
You remember last year when you and I were here? We never thought there'd be an end. And I remember looking at you then. And I remember thinking that Christmas must have been made for us. Because, darling, this is the time of year that you really need love. When it means so very, very much.
It'll be
lonely this Christmas
without you.
Without you at all.
It'll
be so very lonely.
Lonely
and cold.
It'll be lonely this Christmas without you.
And there you go. Now, I'm just about ready to wrap up the show. I did book it for 2 hours, but I kind of suspected I might run over. I actually just wanted to keep it within 90 minutes, but that's okay. We don't have to use the whole 2 hours. But I want to thank all you for being here and helping Jeff and myself celebrate our Christmas special. It has been very much appreciated. And like I say, if it weren't for you, there wouldn't be us. Now, I want you guys to run off and have a wonderful Christmas, okay? And just remember what, you know, it's all about. It's a wonderful season. It's a great way for us to really, really appreciate what we have. And to remember all those that don't. Remember all those that can't be home. Remember our soldiers. Now, on that note, I am going to say goodnight. I'm going to thank you all very much for being here. Merry Christmas, everybody. Good night.
From now on. the fair.